This is Selena Yvette, host of Stories from Planet Earth. Thanks for listening to the following show on Public House Media.
Disarming Disability.
Well, hello and welcome back. We are really excited to really sort of process the last three speakers that we had. We just have concluded the medical model. So we heard from Sally Martins, who's a nurse practitioner and is working on our PhD work in really looking at peer relationships scores that kids with visible differences are having and sort of how those relationship scores change throughout their lives. Then we spoke with Dr. James, who is a orthopedic hand surgeon, who has really been a tremendous and really foundational leader in pediatric hand surgery. And then we spoke with myself, who just completed my doctorate project in occupational therapy and sort of shared a parent resource that I did for my thesis project and sort of just shared what occupational therapy is. And so now it's really the time to sort of process what these three specific roles have within healthcare, but then larger just what medicine is looking like today. And I know that all of this is sort of related to hands, and that is purely because this is the world that we exist in. A lot of the things that we talked about isn't specific to hands. The themes can translate to other different professions. So I just want you to know that you're still a part of the conversation, that like these themes still apply as far as what's happening in medicine today. I know things have a little bit different flavor depending on, you know, what branch of medicine, you know, you could be interacting with. But I do feel that it's important to note that we recognize that everyone that we had talk had some type of relationship to hands, but know that that's not exclusive to this conversation either.
Real. I mean, I feel like when we were talking about guests to have, like, we wanted the most expert of the experts that we could have. And yeah, because of the world that we're in, I mean, like, Dr. James is it when it comes to our community and when it comes to hand surgeries. So to nab her specifically, of course, is such an honor. And yeah, again, that comes back to the fact that that's our experience. And we always want, yeah, like Sarah said, to acknowledge that. But also, I think let's talk maybe a little bit, maybe that's a good space to start from. What parallels do we feel like, or maybe what universal themes did we pull from the conversations that were had that kind of, in looking at the medical world, which when you live with disability in some way, shape, or form, you're going to be spending time in hospitals. You just are. What universal kind of themes did you latch onto in our conversation, Sarah? Dr. Sarah, expert Sarah.
Oh, okay. I was really thankful to hear that because I know that when we sort of talk about the medical model, there is this that it's sort of like the medical model or the social model or, you know, these different models of understanding disability to a point where they really clash. And I feel like there's almost this crusade against the medical model and the like, don't think that we're broken. Don't try to fix us with your microscopes or whatever. And so I think it was just really helpful to hear from experts in the medical field today and know that like the climates that we're existing in today, recognizing that medicine is a space that can help if it's helpful. And I really just appreciated talking both with Sally and with Dr. James, that it was that the child, and again, they work at a children's hospital. So it's that the child is at the center of care and that they can really, you know, what are the different types of supports that they can give to that child to help that child live a meaningful life, and that could be a whole variety of answers, and that medicine can help provide a different variety of answers. But it doesn't need to, like, it doesn't have to be an end all be all. It doesn't have to be like, okay, because you were born with this condition, you have to have this thing, and that's it. And I really feel that hearing from the medical model, that is almost sort of a different perspective than maybe what the medical model used to be, or maybe how we viewed sort of like doctors and surgeons and things like that in the past. But I feel like present day, there's a lot more of like, who is the person and how can we really help the person do the things that they need to do? And are there supports that can be accessed in medicine And whether that's like, you know, traditional medicine or like therapies or different types of supports or interventions that can really help the person do what they want to do, which I feel like kind of helps shift that in my head.
Totally. Yeah. For me, it was really good to hear Sarah, of the two of us, yes, is definitely the scientific mind. And I mean, science is okay, but like, definitely, you know, it was good to hear from somebody who is not thinking about scientific things a lot and who only knows about the experiences specifically that I've had when it comes to being in the hospitals, that it seems the conversations we had were more of a holistic approach, I felt like. The conversations we had were about addressing, yes, the child at the center of the care, but what's going on around them? You know, specifically, what are they feeling emotionally? How do we address those things emotionally? What supports can we put in place? What understanding can we give? And I think that is the step that when the medical model is talked about in a negative way, I think that's the step that's missing, is just like there's more than to a person than just, you know, like put bone back together, person walk outside, person better, you know, like, you know, there's just so much more complexities happening. And I feel like in all three episodes, that's what we were talking about, is just like holistically how it's so much more complicated and that's okay. Which I thought was really, really cool. And yeah. And I would like to think that that is mirrored in all of the kind of doctoring that is happening in the 21st century now. I would love to believe that to be true.
Yeah. And I know, that is a huge part of occupational therapy, right? I took, 2.5 years of textbook classrooms where we spoke a lot about who is the person, what are the barriers that this person is facing? Like, how is this not only like, who is the person, but we talk about one of the big parts of occupational therapy, you could look into the PEO model. So we're looking at who the person is, like, what are the features of the person? What are their personalities? What are the different parts of their body that maybe are working or not working or whatever, like those types of things. Then we're looking at the environment that they're existing in. And the environment is both like the physical environment, it's a social environment. And then also you can extend it to like temporal. So like, where is this person at that stage in their life? Because things that this person needs at 8 are different than the things that this person needs at 25 are different than the things that this person needs at 60, right? So it's like looking at that temporal context as well. And then looking at the occupation they want to do, right? So like, you know, children, their main occupation is play and play exploration. And then, you know, we sort of assume that adults are doing more like self-care tasks and maybe engaging in different types of employment or maybe finding relationships or, you know, sort of like building that self. And then when we're older, you know, roles and occupations change a little bit. So we sort of like look at that model, and so much stressed within occupational therapy is not the diagnosis, because they're like, everybody who has a T3 spinal cord injury is a different person. They are all different people, they all have unique challenges, like, and not every T3 spinal cord injury is the same. You know, sometimes it's a complete, sometimes it's partial, sometimes people are able to get function back faster than others, or like, there's, everything is so unique and so specific that we didn't talk about diagnoses a lot, almost to the point of frustration to some of us, because we're like, we just need to know more about Alzheimer's disease, you know, because we think that that would really help our ability to care and really go through different things with the, you know, different people that we work with. But really, like, that part of it doesn't matter. Like, yes, it adds a little bit. And of course, like, knowing how neurons work is important, but it's not like, okay, so when we have this type of injury, then we provide this type of care. Like, it really is, how do we look at this whole person? What are the barriers that this person is facing, and how can we help them? And I also understand that, like, yes, like, hospitals exist and insurance exists, and there's things that would be amazing that we could do that is within our scope of practice that we're not able to do because there are, sort of systematic limitations and problems, and there's a lot of problems with access to care. So I feel like that is an entirely different conversation, but I feel it's really important looking at who our care providers are, and sort of extracting the sort of like complications of insurance reimbursement type things and like what qualifies for insurance, like that is. So if we just extract extract that from the equation and extract that from the medical model, and really looking at who are the professionals, what is in their scope of practice, and how can we look at that to be able to provide the best care for people who may need it, I think is really helpful too. And on a second note, so that's like one thought. On a second thought, something that was really helpful and liberating for me in my occupational therapy practice is that like people get to make decisions on their medical care, right? And they should. And if people ever feel like they're not in a space where they're making decisions, or they feel that their medical providers are saying that they need to have this type of blah, 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 because or else blah, blah, blah will happen. Like people are always have the right to a second opinion, and people always have the right to consent to care. So just because somebody strongly recommends that something needs to happen, people still get to make that decision. So I feel like that's a really important thing to highlight. And again, every person is unique. Every circumstance is unique. And obviously if I'm unconscious and I need immediate medical care in order to keep my life alive, then like, you know, that's a different type of space. I get that. But largely people have the right and the ownership of making their own medical decisions. And that's something to really take into consideration, you know, and that if medicine is going to be beneficial for person's life and function, then you know you have the right to choose that if that works.
Yeah, totally to everything that you just said. And I feel like it, particularly in the conversation with Dr. James, it was interesting to me that they've done enough research to know kind of where you should be doing surgery versus, I think it was between, what did she say, the ages of 4 and 9, 8 or 9, where you shouldn't mess with, I mean, in the case she was talking about, it was specifically with body image and changing a way in which a body looks, because that's when the child is forming their first opinions. And it's so foundational that unless it is something that is, you know, needed and is needed for function and needed to stay alive, and you know, kind of like those extreme measures, she doesn't like to even do surgery on children. And I think that is a beautiful example of what we're talking about, looking at the person as a person and understanding that, you know, we know scientifically now that between these ages, identity is formed, and let's not touch it if we know that is too important to mess with. And I thought that was really a very beautiful thing that she talked about. And I, you know, of course she said it in a very doctor-esque way where it was just like, these are the facts, but that's beautiful that they understand and realize and practice it in that way. And also I feel lucky in the sense that particularly the conversations we were having at that point, we're talking about elective surgeries. So we understand that that's not always the case. And sometimes there's not choice involved there. Well, yes, yet again, like you said, I guess consent to care. But I also feel like the part of disability, I guess what I'm trying to cover or cover my bases on is the fact that so many of us do rely on, you know, that branch of doctoring and going to see a doctor, and yes, whereas we do have choice of maybe who we're going to see, still some of us have to be going to get certain treatments or have to be receiving some sort of care. So like, so the care and the relationship with the doctoring part of the world, we don't get to choose almost. Does that make sense? Kind of where I'm going with that? Like it's, yes, it's a choice, but also not a choice, I guess maybe is what I'm saying.
Hear that? Yes, yes, yes. And I think that comes into that, like you, and I know that like, this is a really easy thing to say. And I also acknowledge that it's a really easy thing to say. But I just think really helpful to know, or I suppose at the same time, really helpful to know that you have rights as a human, and that you have the right to do research on a particular type of operation, that you have the rights to advocate for yourself and really make sure that whatever type of intervention, whether it be, you know, like a different type, like a medication, or it being an operation, or it being a type of therapeutic practice, like, and I understand, of course, there's outliers in every situation, and I get that, And I know that every circumstance and situation is different. And I know that a lot of people don't have the most positive experiences with the healthcare system. I totally acknowledge that and own that. I'm not trying to gloss over that by any means. And I think knowing that you do have choice and just trying to exercise the type of choice you have and being able to research whether you are able to yourself or the people that are here supporting you can research what type of intervention is and really sort of keep up those protocols, if that makes sense, and really ask and write notes. And you can ask healthcare providers questions and you can make notes on things that they say. And sometimes if healthcare providers, if you're seeing multiple of them, they may say things that seem contradictory. So you can really ask those specific questions like, okay, well, I heard this from this person. I just want to make sure that that's also following up in this care too. And I know that that puts a lot of pressure on a person navigating the healthcare system in that sense too. And I share this in that last summer I had a hernia. So I had to have a hernia operation. And I was offered two different surgical interventions for that. And it was really interesting, like me being in the healthcare and how I needed to advocate for myself in that space too. And even just finding out how long the operations are going to be, what the recovery period's like, what type of medications that I will be on. And those are things I had hoped that my healthcare provider would have just given to me, but he didn't. So these are things that I had to ask on my own, and it was very frustrating. Even somebody who is like has a graduate level education whose English is a primary language, like, and I have access to resources, right? So, and I know that that was a little bit of a frustrating process. But even with that, like, I still was able to ask the questions and have them answered. And I hope that people feel empowered to do that as they are navigating their care. And that medicine in its like best form is to help provide, you know, to help provide access to our lives in its best form. It's here to help allow us to or help be the bridge to have us engage in the things that we want to and need to do throughout our lives, right? Like that is sort of like the role, the like best like space, what is the right words I'm trying to say, that's like in its purest form,
in
like
its
that's
ideal
what
form.
The in its ideal form, yeah, in its ideal form, that's what our medical professionals are
doing. Well, I think you knocked the nail on the head when you were talking about it can be overwhelming to understand or know what your options are, right? Like, I am somebody who absolutely feels that way. And it takes time and it takes energy. And I think that's kind of a reoccurring theme within the disability experience, is that because we're adapting and doing things in a little bit of a different way, it takes so much emotional time and so much emotional energy and so much literal time and literal energy to become the experts in all of these different spaces, right? How do I become an expert truly in the way in which the world is treating me and what microaggressions mean? And how do I deal with these scripts of conversations that I'm constantly having with people in my everyday life, right? These are things that nobody really is bringing us those answers. And I feel like the medical world is its own silo of that form of energy, that you have to almost like drink your Red Bull and be like, okay, let's go. I have like worked my way up into understanding that this is going to take time. This is going to take energy. I might have to disagree with a doctor. I might have to fight with an insurance company. I might have to, you know, like there's just extra that goes into it. And I think this is another area where that is happening. And I think it's okay to acknowledge that. And I think that we can only be encouraged by the conversations that we did just have with our three experts, you included Dr. Sarah, because that repeated messaging of truly caring for the person as a person is what I took away from them, right? Like that is what I took away. So building yourself into being ready to kind of like dive in and become your own expert, I feel like is worth it. Maybe that's my idealist brain talking, but I think it's fair to acknowledge the fact that that's a lot of time and energy and resource that people are spending.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's more of the system that we have set up in place, right? And I think it's really easy to get caught in the system and get stuck in the system and to get angry with the system. But I think if we can extract the system from the healthcare providers themselves, and really know that it takes a lot of time. Well, I suppose it takes a lot of time either way. But people are committing large parts of their lives and their careers for these professions. And it's not an easy adventure for them either. So I feel like that helps provide the context that they really want to do this because they really believe in it and they really care and they really want to help us, like, and us being people, not just people with disabilities, but really wanting to help ourselves live happy and healthy lives, right? So but knowing that there are like large systematic barriers that are can be pretty debilitating, that are really frustrating to navigate. So really working to extrapolate that. And it's not that there are people who are living and working in the medical model that are really on our side, and our side being on the side of people who are living with disabilities, in that they want to help provide, good lives for all of us. So I feel like to help add that to our understanding of the medical model, and helping to give life to our healthcare professionals and see them as people, because I think it's also really easy to be like, the blah blah blahs and the blah blah blahs are like this. So I really appreciated that I heard that in both the conversations with Sally and Dr. James, that it's like these are just really incredible women who are trying their best with the tools that they've learned, in order to help the lives of kiddos living with limb differences right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I feel like just like on the tail end of this specific part of our conversation, I feel like I just want to reiterate the fact that we acknowledge the fact that specifically kind of the world that we live in and what specifically we were talking about, were not specifically like life endangering, life altering surgeries. And there are people with disabilities who are going through that. And that is a part of the experience. And I think that's a slice of the pie that we have extra privilege in, where we have privilege there. And I think I just want to acknowledge that. Okay. What do we want to talk about next?
In school, we talked about self-determination and that being sort of in the space. I think it sort of came from the space of individuals who have different types of intellectual differences or disabilities, and that people still get choice to determine what they want to do in their lives. And I think particularly as individuals enter adulthood and being a therapist and perhaps living in a group home or some way to help best support individuals who are existing in this space, and somebody wants to engage in alcohol or somebody wants to engage in different types of sexual activities, like at what point do you let that or not let that happen? Like, where our ethics play in, like, people still have the right to self-determination to do what they want to do. But then are we just imposing on them what we think they understand or what we understand of a situation? Or just because we find a situation is risky, does that mean that individuals are not allowed to be involved in it? Or how can we best support individuals who may or may not? I mean, really, what is our determination to see if they understand how risky a situation is? Or, you know, me as an individual, like, I have the right to choose to be engaged in risky situations. But it brought up really interesting conversations in my OT program, in that sort of how can we best support individuals, and where do ethics play in? And is that me internalizing things? Is that me superimposing, or us as healthcare professionals superimposing rules on top of it? It led to an interesting conversation. I mean, we didn't necessarily have rights of answers, but it was like, you know, if these things come up, like, how do you respond? And it's important to think through these things and to really, of course, we want everyone to be safe, but allowing that space for mistakes to happen, but how big of a space do you let them, right? Like, how can you support people? And how can I be supported too in life too? By giving them like an appropriate threshold to make mistakes before intervening, before they like crash and burn type of thing too, right?
That is interesting because I feel like, as the healthcare professional who is there to provide service and who is there to help bridge a gap of independence or bring independence, right? Yeah, that ethics conversation is fascinating because I parallel it in my brain to the microaggression when somebody, this happens to me probably once a year, I'll have somebody literally like try to give me money or gift me with something who's a complete stranger. And then who will be like, oh, bless you. God made you so special. You're such a gift to this earth. Who's totally talking mm-hmm. down to me, right? Mm-hmm. Who has no mm-hmm. understanding of the fact that that the things that they are saying are totally condescending. And in their world, they are doing something so kind and so nice. And yet, of course, it's not. So I'm paralleling it to that kind of feeling, and obviously it's not the same thing, that feeling mm-hmm, of almost condescension of choices and mm-hmm. and who does get to make your choices, and should that healthcare provider or person who is helping you be a part of those, do you have to welcome them? Do you have to, how does that play back and forth? And certainly they have more play in our lives than a lot of other communities. So they are a strong voice that is in our brain, right? Like so many, a pattern of societal thought that is not even spoken, but that I can tell you is felt within, you know, the specifically one-handed community is what do we do about prosthetics? And depending on who you talk about, you can pull common themes about what is talked about and what works and what doesn't work. And that's totally just people having opinions and talking and inserting what they think and feel. Does that make sense where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
Like it is inherently kind of weaved into our culture. And so it's a powerful position to be in when you can be a service provider to a community, right? It's almost this power that's held. It is. So I don't know if any of that rambling made sense, but that in real time was what I was thinking about.
It did. You know what? It's kind of funny. This may be an entirely different segue, but we're just going to come here. So come with it. It makes me think of, because yes, healthcare professionals are in a level of authority. I don't know if that's the right word to use, but yes, like do have impact on our lives, right? I think it's important to help shift that in the sense that we still have choice in that, right? Like health, like I can't just walk up to a prosthetics office and be like, hey, I'd like, I want a prosthetic arm. Like there's a system that I need to be a part of, and I need to meet with certain people in order to approve those things for me to have that appointment, right? Like I can't just walk into an operating room and be like, hey, can you do this thing on me? Like, no, there's like, you have to meet with people. People have to make decisions. People have to, but I feel like each one of those should really be a conversation. And I really feel like fighting for that conversation is important, which makes me think of I am living with a really good friend of mine for this interim while I'm figuring out my life in Philadelphia, and they're really lovely and fun, and now I notice that I'm singing about everything that I do in my life, because we always sing about everything, which is cute. But we watched Frozen 2 this week, and it was really exciting, and I hadn't seen Frozen 2 before, so it was the first time. And
I haven't yet either.
There's a moment. Okay, great. So I'm not going to ruin it for you, but there's this moment where Anna is like out adventuring, doing the things that Anna is doing. She has a plan. She's facing some barriers in the plan that she's trying to do. She's not able to do it on her own. She ends up being like sort of swept up off of this thing from Kristoff, right? And there's sort of traditional, you know, male, female roles in Disney, sort of like there's this damsel in distress and then the prince comes in and saves them and then everything's great. But here, Kristoff like picks her up, puts her on their horse, which is named somebody that I forget. So don't judge me on that. But so Sven, is that what the horse's name is? Or the reindeer? What is the
like,
deer?
It's a reindeer. Yes.
Sven. Yeah, it's a reindeer. Yeah. Oh God, I was like, horses in America. Sven. I was like, maybe it's Steven. I don't know. Anyway, okay. So he scoops up Anna, puts her on Sven, and he says, "I'm here. What do you need?" And I feel like that's what the medical professional is here, is sort of like, I see that there's these things that you need to do in your life. Like I see there's these barriers this person is facing. There's these things that this person needs to be able to do. And the medical role in that space of authority and power, if you will, they're able to have the resources to pick up that person, and sort of put them on their, but then be able to ask like, I'm here, what do you need? Versus like, okay, like I see what's happening. I think that the best thing to do is X, Y, and Z. You clearly haven't done the right things, or else you wouldn't be in the space of disaster, right? Like, cause there's two different ways that conversation could happen. And I feel like the conversations that we're having with, with Sally and with Dr. James, and I like to think with myself too, was sort of that way of like, okay, like here are the tools that I have, here are the resources that I can provide you access to, like what do you need to do and how can we best support you? And maybe this needs to be a mutual thing, like maybe like what independence looks like for us is sort of being in this together in a sense, and together could be having this ongoing relationship with multiple healthcare professionals, you know, and even, you know, healthcare workers in the sense of, you know, if we want to include like aides and, you know, whatever rehab and caregivers and things like that in that space too. But that I just really loved that imagery of like, okay, like here I am, I'm here to help give these resources and I can be extra layers of supports. Like what do you need and how can we help you get there? And I just really like that.
I mean, I feel like that's the cherry on top of the conversation. Yeah. I think that's beautiful. And I'm thankful that the people that we talk to, I feel like really understand that. And, and it's good to be reminded that again, the healthcare providers are there to be a resource to us. And even I think about how we were talking about them being translators, right? Especially with kids are coming in and speaking and they're verbalizing lots of things, but maybe there's a meaning behind what they're saying. They're asking for a Barbie hand, a prosthetic that doesn't move or doesn't do anything functional well. Maybe it's a time in their life when it's extra emotion and they're trying to navigate actually socially what it means and trying to blend more and, you know, like actually translating what those kids need and having the tools to be able to help them when they're in those moments. I think that's great. And I'm so thankful. Again, if you want to check out the conversations that we were talking about, all about the medical model, you can check out our website with links to all links and resources to all of the guests that we had and all the conversations that we had together. They were amazing. Please go back and listen if you didn't. Anything else you want to wrap up with, Sarah, Dr. Sarah, expert Sarah?
Oh, check out nursing, check out being surgeon. Healthcare is somewhere that you want to be. Like find ways that you can. And if that's something that's interesting for you, that there are ways that you can be a healthcare provider, regardless of what difference or disability looks like, which I think is really important too.
Huzzah! Cool. Yeah. We'll see you next week. Same time, same place, where we will have amazing conversations. We can't wait for you to join us and always make sure you're disarming disability.
Thank you for spending part of your day with us. We want to give thanks to our network, Public House Media, for our intro beats to Jason Bards with Cybernetics, our logo art, We Want to Remember Patrice. You can find his work at normalpersons.com.
Be sure to follow Disarming Disability on Facebook and Instagram. And lastly, be sure to check out our website, disarmingdisability.com, where you can find all 13 episodes of Season 1, links to resources, transcriptions, and discussion questions for each episode, and check out our blog where we feature amazing disability advocates. See you next week.
To show you how easy it is to file a claim with Geico, we hired sports commentator Dick Vitale.
Tonight's matchup is me versus an ugly fender bender. If I can eke out a win, it would be a miracle, baby.
Mr. Vitale, it wouldn't be a miracle because Geico gives you a team of experts to help manage your claim.
That's going to be a nail biter.
Nope. The Geico team is there for you 24/7.
Now that's a dipsy dude dunkaroo of a claims team. Geico is awesome, baby, with a capital A.
Geico. Great service without all the drama.
Me, 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 but also you. The Pharaoh fast-forwards his favorite foreign film, Powder Donut. Okay, what's my line?
The only line I see here on the script is get options based on your budget with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive.
Oh, man, that's a tongue twister, huh? I'm sorry, I'm going to need a few more minutes. Bulbous Walrus. The Bulbous Walrus.
The Name Your Price tool. Only from Progressive.
The owl ran afoul of the comatose coxswain.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.